You can find LUL Podcast on lulpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter at LUL Podcast. You can also subscribe to our LUL Podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and TuneIn Radio. Level Up Language Podcast is sponsored by Davis School District and Clearfield High School. Okay, welcome to today's episode. Today's episode, we have a special guest with us. We have the superintendent of Davis School District. Superintendent Reed Newey joins us. He just celebrated his first anniversary as superintendent in the district, right?
First anniversary. December.
Yep. So we're excited to have him.
When we had the podcast originally, we had our principal, Chris Keim, sub in for you. So he was the star athlete, and we've got another star athlete with us today. He said he wasn't a star athlete, but.
Yeah. Well, I was here when Chris went through as a coach, and I will concur with that.
No. And that's true. Superintendent Newey started here at Clearfield High School. His teaching career, he went on to the Weber School District, eventually became an administrator in Weber School District, and he was the assistant superintendent there before being appointed here. One unique thing that he did there that we can maybe talk about in our podcast that has to do with competency-based education is he worked as a career and technical education director and executive director of secondary education. Is that right?
Well, actually, we were lucky to have the chance to start a school that was a one-to-one school based strictly on performance and competency levels for advancement. And so it was a great opportunity to take kids and personalize their learning to at their pace or demonstrated by assessment and performance level.
So basically, really, that's what we're trying to do here in the district is take the students wherever level they are and help them grow according to their ability, and then using assessments like our IPA to measure that growth, but then also to give them a plan of where they need to go in the future to continue learning. And basically, competency-based education, we measure their learning and growth against a set of standards that we all have in common. So Superintendent Newey, just to start off, in general, how do you feel about competency-based education? What's some of the pros to it, or
and what does it mean to you, really?
What does it mean to you?
Well, yeah. I think my idea of competency-based education, it was kind of why, we started this school and we're so passionate about it in Weber, and that is, I think every student deserves the opportunity, particularly with the tools we have at our disposal now, to have a personalized education. Now, you know, it's difficult to teach 30 to 40 kids and individualize every student's every minute of their class. But competency-based education is, to me, it's intuitive to the way we learn, the way we achieve. You know, you watch a child that develops, a 1-year-old, a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, everything is competency based. When they can do something well and demonstrate it, they move on to the next thing. And so I think one of the challenges we've had with traditional education and the way we've done it in the past is it's a little bit counterintuitive in terms of, you know, we sit in rows, everybody advances at the same pace, we all face forward, we all are on a teacher-driven pace a lot of the time, and we can't completely overcome all that at once, but a competency-based model is a great inroad to that.
Right. And one of the hardest things I think with that is understanding where each of your 40 kids are.
Absolutely.
And having what tools do we use to actually measure that to get the data to move them on?
Right. We have to have, really accurate measurement, and achievement, levels that are established by teachers that really understand what we're after. And like you said, I mean, it's hard to give that personalized model. There is some bulk approach to it where you establish the standards and everybody has to meet that before they move on, but you can do that individually, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Right. Especially with technology nowadays, if we have the right tools and the right resources, it's definitely more possible than it has been in the past.
Right. Right. And, you know, foreign language is a great area that's benefited from technology. I think we've just scratched the surface with it. We, you know, one of our goals is to get to an opportunity where every student has access at all times to technology because of what we can do and the things we can leverage with that in every subject matter.
Right. I mean, I had a student a few weeks ago. We were talking my Spanish too. And I can tell it's not as challenging of a class as it is for other students as it is for her. She's not quite ready to move on to level 3. But she made the comment. She's like, it's not that I don't like the class. I just wish we could go faster. And I looked at her. I was like, for you, I wish I could. But, you know, it brings up that challenge of with 40 kids, I have to find a balance of keeping all of you together while at the same time teaching all of you individually.
Yeah, it's a big challenge. I mean, you know, the most effective foreign language strategies I've seen too, are a heavy oral assessment component.
Right.
And you know, that's exhausting and it's challenging when you're trying to orally assess every student regularly. You know, I think there's some group oral work that can be done, but, yeah, the numbers make it a challenge, and I think that's why we have to leverage every tool we have with it.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we have cool technology now. We have our language labs that we can record individual audios, and we can assign them to people. From your perspective as superintendent, what are a few things that at least teachers can do? Because you said, and we'll all agree, we can't just change overnight.
Right.
It's such a huge endeavor. I think most of us agree that's a change that needs to happen, but it's going to come step by step. So as this podcast is directed more towards teachers, what are a few things that you recommend teachers can start doing day to day in their classrooms to make it more competency based?
Well, I think you talked about, you know, you have to have accurate assessment models, and then you have to have a willingness on the part of kind of your school structure in terms of administration to be able to have the flexibility to one, have honest conversations with students and parents, and then convince everyone involved of the validity of placement, and then kind of gear everything that you're doing around that. It's tough with different models when you aren't fully committed, when you try to operate in one in some areas and then come back to a different model of operation in another.
Right.
So I think you guys, from what I've seen of the work you're doing, you know, you've made that commitment to it. And, that's the first step in it, I think. And then you build all your, you know, your support for that from there.
It's interesting you talked about having an honest conversation with parents and students, and I think all of us here, we've actually asked our students in all the different levels what they think about the idea of, you know, moving up when you're ready. And there have been some questions, credit related, that sort of thing, but almost to a T, every student understands and can see the importance of that and why it makes sense. It's like, that's what we had a few students, I think, in each of our classes that said that's what education should be. I should move when I'm ready, and so I can keep being challenged and keep growing. And if I'm not ready to move, I don't want to get moved to a class. I'm going to struggle to get D's and C's. It doesn't make sense. And it's interesting having that honest conversation or just having them throw out questions. How, I don't want this, mean this to sound demeaning, but how logical they really can be.
Yeah. And they probably think the same of us.
They probably do, yeah. But, and then we had our Falcon preview, just recently. Falcon previews where incoming sophomores, and actually they opened up this year to all current students. There'll be students next year that aren't graduating to come and see what classes are offered and what clubs and that. So had quite a few parents come to that, and we were explaining that to parents. And again, most parents, as you're explaining to it, nodding their head, yeah, no, that makes sense. I understand why you would do that, yeah.
Well, and I think what you've done here, you have an intentional structure of what you've put in place with goals. You know, it's really a competency-based model you've applied to yourself. And that is, you have markers and standards of where you want to be, and that's how you teach and how you set up the program. I think the more clear we are on laying that out, and then, you know, you have to deliver on it. I mean, you have to show that those students that, you know, maybe aren't up to level, that have to move down, that they're reinforced, that they're taught now to remedy their deficiency, wherever that may be. Cause that's also, you know, I think the tough thing is too, when we approach it as we only own our successes and not the failures that are demonstrated in our students.
Right.
So,
and that's one thing I like with this is it's challenging to the teacher. Cause like you say, like it's on us, like especially with the structure we have in place. If things aren't going the way it should, then I need to reflect on myself, my practices and things like that. And I enjoy that challenge because I think it makes me better. It makes me focus more on the basics and, how to get myself and my students where we all need to get.
We're outcome based believers rather than process worshipers or something. I don't know.
Well, how would you say I think that? The proof is in the pudding. Yeah. Like, it's been tested and tried. The way that we're currently teaching or trying to teach is what the national standards have been asking for just over 20 years. But we're just now kind of starting to get there. And and it's not just us. Like a lot of people throughout the country are just barely kind of making this transition for world language. But the proof is there. It's just so obvious. It just smacks you in the face.
But it's hard to get the change.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gone.
Cause one thing that we saw, like, so I do levels 3 and up, for example, and it kind of arose with Davin and I, like in my level 4 classes, I would get a bunch of sophomores coming in whose skills were down at like level 1. And I thought, man, I understand the need to scaffold, but that's a lot of scaffolding.
Yeah.
From level 4 all the way down to level 1 in the same class. And I thought it came across to me as though we were just throwing them in the deep end with like their very first time swimming and just setting them up to fail.
So that's where the proficiency model comes in your mind, in terms of they ought to be assessed and they ought to be placed in the level of performance.
Right. Right.
Not necessarily how many years you got under your belt.
Right. Yeah. They come from a variety of different teachers and experiences and things like that. And so it just made it difficult. And we'd been kicking around for the first couple of years that we were here. Like, man, I wonder if there were any way we could do like a placement assessment. So we finally reached out to Bonnie at the end of the year, last year, the end of third term, and asked, is there anything, like, would this be possible for the student's best interest?
Yeah.
Cause we get, there's a certain amount of embarrassment or shame for repeating a course.
It's not normally, but we thought, that's accepted.
Not, yeah. And we thought, but that's not the idea or the intent. The intent is, let's let these kids learn at the rate they're supposed to be learning. So we've been taught to teach to their level plus one.
Right.
But for those that walk in so many levels behind, I mean, it's their level plus 50.
So do you have assessments in place for that now?
Yeah, we're in charge of the IP.
And have you been able to move kids' levels according to that?
Last year was our first experience.
We did a pilot with the north end district, or north of the district schools.
We were able to place a few.
Yeah.
A few groups.
Yeah, I don't know if any other schools placed students, but we did. Yeah. With those, with the information, with the data that we received, we placed those students.
Oh.
And we didn't receive all the data from all the schools.
So you worked with them, the assessments in advance, and
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So now it's mandated for all world language departments to place students.
Yeah.
And so this will be the first year that we have to, and we have to have the data. But from what we've seen, it's helped a lot already. Like some of the kids that he placed back into like my level 2, it was obvious, like this is exactly where you're supposed to be. It was pretty obvious from the get go that.
And
the
we can get a lot better and a lot more accurate with it.
What, do you get many, much movement the other way?
up?
We have some.
You have
but it does from certainly doesn't AP. Balance yeah. out. It's more downward than
the vast majority move right along, just like they should. Yeah. And it's a few that go either direction. But there are some that they're fully capable mid-year of making the jump. I had one that he was in Spanish 2 last year. He started in Spanish 3. It was just obvious, like, you're ready to go. And so he made that decision on his own after the first term. And so now he's in level 4, and he's doing just great.
Yeah, and I've got a girl moved from level 2 to 3, and she was just every test she did, and I felt like she was hiding something from me. She kept doing a little bit more, and I could tell she was just bored. She wasn't getting...
Well, see, that one case is the only reason you need... In my mind. I mean, there's all the 50 that weren't on level that it makes a huge difference for. But, you know, you get one. Well, you're talking about a kid that probably loves school, but might maybe bored now all of a sudden.
Yeah. Yep. It's just in the right place. And that's the idea with even if you have to stay back in a certain level, it's just where can we put you where you're going to grow the most?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, when we can take assessment and take it from assessment and it's now just part of the learning process. That's another, I think that's another real positive part of competency-based education. It takes, you know, assessment now goes from being a final evaluation to just another step in the learning process.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, you know, that's another thing I really like about it is that, you know, it really reduces testing to a non-testing format in that it's all just a continuum of learning and where you fall is determined by your competency level. And it's, you know, with an old paradigm or the way we look at it, everything's blocked according to where the test is.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's funny because on the interpretive rubrics that our national organization has, they call it a continuum of learning for their reading and their listening skills. And, because the reading and learning that's chunked so strangely, each student acquires different things at different times. You can't necessarily say like you can with the writing and the speaking, they'll do this and then they'll do this and then they'll move on to this. Each student gets something different at different times. So they call it a continuum. So I just thought that was interesting that they use that term because that's exactly what they say.
And that the training that the district had last week for administrators and the two teachers were invited.
Oh, did you?
I wasn't able to go. Miles went and then Kelsey Flint.
That's right. That's
one of our amazing English teachers, and she's done Chinese. She's phenomenal. So they went. And anyway, Miles brought back and was talking to us yesterday in our department meeting about – there was some statistic, I don't know if it was last night, maybe it was in his own studying, but he said that actually teachers will do 98% of the cognitive thinking during class, and students are really actually only doing like 1.8 or something like that, some statistic. So all then the he
questions.
Said that, or questions.
Yeah,
teachers were doing all the questions. That's why teachers are so tired and exhausted, because they're actually the ones doing all the process to prep it and plan it. And so all day yesterday during my classes, I was just slapping myself in the face like, man, I am the one. And I pride myself on making my kids do all the work because that's where the learning is the practice for foreign language. And all day I was just realizing, I was like, I'm doing the cognitive stuff though. Like, I mean, they're working, they're learning Spanish. I always hit my district targets. Things are happening, but I was like, oh, I got to take this a whole step up. And so today I practiced that and it was hard. There was one class, those students did not enjoy it. They did not have fun. And so the class after that fourth period came in and they're just like, Lemke, I heard today was just a bear. Like it was just terrible and hard and we have to create our own questions. I was like, yeah, but you can do it. And fourth period did awesome. I mean, they just like, oh, so I can say it like this? Like, yeah, that's a good question. Oh, this isn't that. And like fourth period is great. And I hardly said anything after the first 20 minutes. I just said, this is what you need to do. And then they did that. And I said, okay, now let's do it like this, like just structuring. And it was amazing to see that when you turn it over to them and make them do the thinking and the questioning and the building, they learn a lot more. So that goes back to the question, like what changes have we seen? For me, it's made my job easier in the sense that I'm not so tired of trying to press them. Really, that should be their job. They should be the ones like, I know what you need to learn. here's a scenario that you can do it in. Here's some structures or some vocabulary. You tell me, how do you handle this problem, or how do you do this? And it was amazing today, that fourth period class, just to see them work it out. And that's a complete change from before, where it's just, okay, here's your questions, memorize this. Okay, it's very teacher centered. Where now it's like really students are engaging themselves.
It goes back to one of the major challenges with competency-based education, outside of what happens in the classroom necessarily, is the re-education of students of what learning is. Mm-hmm. Because they're not used to them being the generator of their learning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're used to passively coming and being told, and here's when the test is, and then we're going to the next unit, right, and so on. They don't have to evaluate their learning, nor take any part in it, because you got it all.
Right. The teacher controlled too much. Yep. And today I realized, and I thought I wasn't until that, what Miles said yesterday. I was like, I'm controlling too much of their learning. They need to control and own that more than I am.
Well, and students struggle with it, and parents will too.
Right.
Until, you know, you can kind of educate them to where they're using a competency based.
Mm-hmm. I just thought of an analogy.
He's our analogy man. He's putting a book together.
So to me, it's a little bit like the difference between taking your car to a mechanic and letting him change the oil and just tell you it's good, or you getting under the hood and checking the oil and learning a bit about your car, that the oil, you know, so that the assessment should be, going back to kind of the idea that an assessment should be a learning tool. We want to get the kids under the hood, so to speak, and look at the oil with us and say, look, this is what you did. This is what your car is doing, whatever. And you kind of learn something from checking your own oil, I think, you know, and being able to do that. So that's one thing I was going to say is we want the kids to understand the assessments and see them and be able to monitor their own progress and drive their own learning that way. And, the other thing that's changed, Roger kind of alluded to this, but our new tests are called, we call them IPAs, and they're just closer. We're trying to get closer and closer to modeling. Well, we talked the other day about an ideal test would really be in foreign language, to take a kid, ship him over to the country, and just have him survive for a couple weeks.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
So we're trying to model that really by assessing everything that language requires. You know, listening, reading, writing, and speaking. Whereas in the past, we were heavily focused on writing,
yeah,
and some reading. But listening, speaking really weren't assessed the way that they should be. So that's another major change is, and like Roger said, it forces you to change with the IPA, because you have to realize, that eventually the kids are going to be tested on this. And we've got to start asking them or exposing them to opportunities to speak and listen, you know, to these authentic recordings or in these authentic situations. So,
well, those are two great analogies. Authenticity, you know, again, kind of going back to the intuitive nature of learning. Kids or children know when it's not authentic, when it doesn't mm-hmm. feel authentic to them. And,
yeah,
you know, when they get under the hood, also, it isn't just about that one time under the hood. Every time subsequent to that, you learn something more.
Right.
You know.
And you tie it back to the time they got under the hood, and you say, remember, we checked the oil, and this is why
right.
it was this way. And
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. Great analogy.
Yeah. So,
I think the purpose, really, of competency-based education is to help people realize that education really isn't something that happens inside the classroom. It's outside.
Yeah.
Like Brandon was trying to emphasize, that our point with doing proficiency-based education isn't so that they can pass a test in our class or they can do some fun activity. The idea is that when they're not in our class, what can they do with that language in some real-life scenario, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
As he mentioned. And really, if you think about it, classroom is a platform to assist the learning and get them on a path. But the actual education is, what do they retain? What can they use when you're not there? Yeah, what can they do when you're not there? And what can they continue learning on their own because they've got these tools and things like that in place, which I think is the main point of competency-based education, is transferring that ownership to the student, so that student, wherever they are, they're going to be just fine, and they can adapt and they can continue learning. They can continue learning about cars or whatever their scenario is. The school just gives them a platform and the tools, and they go out from there. Okay, well, we've excused Superintendent Reed Newey. He had to leave and go to a meeting at the district. Very busy man. We are grateful that he was able to give us his time and talk about competency-based education, some of the directives and direction that we're going to go with the competency-based education here in Davis School District. We still want to discuss a few points. I think one point that Superintendent Newey brought up is the focus on students. As Roger and Miles provided examples of students who moved ahead in their class because they were ready to and they were able to, and that's where they were going to learn and be challenged. Superintendent Newey said, you know, sometimes it's just that one student. That's all the evidence and proof and reason we really need to move forward with competency-based education or change or do whatever we're doing. As I look at my class, I have students that are in level two that there are some that maybe should have done level one again. They're doing okay in level two, but it's a lot harder and it's a lot more challenging. And I think that's the focus, is when you realize that this is what this student really, really needs, but our system, our traditional educational approach is just not set up that way to assist them. And I think that's where the changes that we want to make with competency-based education is we're really making this about the student. And in a lot of ways, it's not necessarily going to make the teacher's job any harder. I mean, really, what do you guys think about? Is our job going to get harder with competency-based education, or is it going to get easier?
I would say yes. Well, I was going to back up a little bit because you said something that just made me think about students being challenged. And it's not that we don't want students to be challenged. I mean, we just want them to be challenged appropriately, because you can get challenged with things where you're barely scraping by. And minute by minute, day by day in that class, for example, you're going to be miserable, and your ability with the language it's not going to grow. It's going to probably stagnate or go backwards.
Right.
So it's not that we don't want to challenge students.
Challenge them appropriately.
Challenge them appropriately. Make sure they're at the right place, like we had mentioned, to grow the most. And if you're getting challenged too much, you're not going to grow as much as you could as if we're just kind of, I'm just envisioning, and this is a bad example. Don't think this is what it is, but the donkey with the carrot on a stick, right? It's just in front of the donkey. So like, I'm going to keep trying to get it. I'm going to keep trying to get it. But if you get that too far out in front of the donkey, I don't really care. I can eat some grass right here, right? I'm not going to, if that makes sense. Not saying that students are donkeys.
Or even see the carrot, really.
Or
right. If it's too hard, they might not even see.
Yeah,
what's the
they
point
may not
or
see that carrot. So we want them challenged, just challenge appropriately. And then the way when I answered yes, because I think it's both. I think for some it can be difficult because they've got to change the way they're grading, change the way they structure their classes. So it has the potential for being difficult. But in the end, it's a lot more fluid. It's a lot more holistic is the fancy word. The newer version of that word, by the way, I think is organic. It's a lot more organic, right? To teach your class and to organize your class based on proficiency, because that's what the real world is. So it might be hard for a little bit to get that, go through that paradigm shift. But once you've been through it and once you've gone down that road of proficiency, I think it gets easier.
Yeah. And it does.
You're not worried about perfection and you're not worried about, right.
Any change is hard when you start, because I think about how many changes I've made over the last year and a half as we've gone to this. We've always taught proficiency here at Clearfield, since I've been here anyway. But to go to a very full competency-based model with the IPAs, proficiency-based grading, those have been a lot more changes. So initially it's been harder, but I've noticed within my classroom when it has worked well, teaching in those 85 minutes is a lot easier because, as we've talked about, especially with your statistic that has crushed my career, realizing that I'm doing all the cognitive work. Well, now that I flipped that over the last week or so, my 85 minutes is a lot more stress-free. It's a lot more worry-free because I know the students are learning, but the ownership has been transferred to them.
Yeah. And
that's made it a lot easier.
For the listeners who aren't sure what that's referring to, I went to a training at the district with Weston, and I only heard your name pronounced, I think, twice.
So I apologize, Weston. I don't know how to say Weston Kishnick, author of Bold School, which is an amazing book, but he referenced this stat that throughout the course of a day, on average, educators ask several hundred questions. And on average, students ask 1.8.
Right.
That's a number I remember specifically because it was just, it's a specific number, but also it's so blasted low. And that's why teachers go home at the end of the day so cognitive, so drained because they're cognitively drained. They can't think straight, can't walk straight, can't plan things, can't do things very well. So, like you said, it's about putting that on the students and trying to get them more involved with, I mean, structure your lesson, sure, but get them involved with coming up with words that they want to try to figure out, or have them look for articles that they want to read. And what kind of questions are you going to ask about the articles? Get them involved in there. So they're learning, but it's a lot more on them versus us telling them what they need to know.
Yeah, and I think we did a number of episodes ago where we talked about what does our classroom look like, and we talked about how we open the class, how do we instruct, what kind of activities we do. We did kind of that snapshot of our classroom. And I talked about my starters. When they first come into class, what are they doing? Well, I always like to get them right into the language. So I used to do is I'd have five questions on the board and they just answer in a complete sentence, personalized questions. And I focused on any structure or whatever we were learning, made sure those were in the questions. Well, then, you know, you brought up that scenario. Students are asking 1.8 of the questions. We're asking whatever the other percentage on that. And so I've changed my starters. Then I thought, okay, if I want them to create in the language and put it together on their own. So now I do it, and this still isn't perfect, but it's a switch and it's a start where I tell them, you need to write me three sentences in the target language, and you have to use these five words. And those five words are your cohesive devices and a structure, like a verb that we've recently learned to get them practicing, but also getting them pieced together. And so the first couple of days are like, we write about anything? It's like, yep. As long as it's in Spanish and it's about you, it's your life, just write it. And the sentences have actually been a lot better, a lot more thought put into them, a lot more creation instead of just question, answer, kind of like robots really is what it was. And students have asked, like, can we go back to the old starters? These are kind of hard. and I thought, like, the fact that this is kind of hard shows that those old starters really weren't doing a ton. I mean, they were okay. They were still practicing, but they weren't doing what they really should have been doing or could have been doing. And two, just because it's hard, it's not a reason not to do it, because pretty soon it won't be hard anymore.
Right.
It's like, oh, I know that word. I mean, Spanish too, we're practicing. We're talking about what do you do inside your house, chores and things like that. I have to, for example, tengo que. And I put that on their starter three times. And I've changed the cohesive devices or the conjunctions or whatever. So I changed some, but some structures I make sure to put in there multiple times so they really get that mm-hmm. down. And I hope tomorrow as I do their midterm IPA, I want to see how often that tango K comes out and see how they use it so I can see if that's really being effective or not.
The thing that stands out to me about the transition, and Superintendent Newey talked about it, is educating others, the students and their parents, because it is different. And, I think he even mentioned the example, you know, traditionally you turn stuff in, you do stuff, you behave yourself to a decent degree, and there's your A. Well, not anymore. And it's hard. It's hard to express things to parents. Like we run into things fairly often here where, you know, things are different here. It is very much, if not all, proficiency based. And so if a student has gone all the way through, you know, a few levels at the junior high and gotten straight A's and come here and are not pulling straight A's in the language, then all of a sudden we're kind of the bad guy. It's just a different way of grading, and ours happens to be very heavily, like I said, if not all, based on proficiency and what can you do. And so that would be difficult. That would be difficult to wrap your mind around the first time you encounter it. And so I think there's going to be some lumps to be taken for sure, but I think if we're if we're committed and if we're in it for the long haul, then that's just something that we can ride out, knowing that what awaits on the other side is going to be worth it.
I think one of those education things we have to work on is, we mentioned this a little earlier in this episode, that sometimes we look at repeating a course as, well, that's embarrassing or that's sad, mm-hmm. or I you know, there's a lot of negative connotation to repeating a course. We need to get away from that, because really there's not a lot of harm in having to repeat. And I found in my classes, I've actually surveyed some of them just without their names. I just wanted to know how many, what classes have they taken in the past, junior high, high school, and how many times. And that was it. And, a good number of my level twos, it's actually their third year in Spanish. Some of them might be a little bit more than that. We would rather have it be more effective. I think we would rather that every student is able to move on just fine and master it, the master language, or be proficient in the language to move on every time. But what I noticed from that is, one, students are already kind of competency driven anyway, because they're making these decisions that, you know, I'm not ready for level two, so I'm going to do level one again just to make sure that I have it down, or whatever the reason is.
Well, and to clarify a little bit, so we did placement last year. We didn't get all the data that we needed from all of the places.
Right.
So only a small portion of
your, we weren't able to place any of my students actually in level two. I didn't have enough data to do that.
Yeah, and a pretty good chunk of mine were placed.
And yours were. And what we've seen from that so far is that's actually working really well from the students that were placed back in my back. I don't mean to say back. For the students that were placed in level two that maybe started out this year in level four, it was pretty clear right away that, yeah, level two is the right spot where you need to be. But students are basically already thinking in that manner. A lot of students will come in, it's like, I don't know if I'm ready, or I'm scared. And a lot of times they're always nervous when it's a different teacher, or if it's a different school, if they're coming from junior high to high school. That's always a big transition anyway. So a lot of times it's just, they just need to go through the class for a few weeks. But the point is that there's no harm in having to do Spanish 2 again. You know, that just means you're that much better at the language when you're done. You have that much more of a solid foundation. You just get to reemphasize those kind of things. So then when you do move on to the next level, or whatever the situation is, you're just, it's just that much easier to transition. And it shouldn't be looked upon in a negative light. It shouldn't be frowned upon at all.
Well, and kind of to that same point, when I was in elementary and my first couple of years of junior high, I was great at math. Got my straight A's in math.
Before calculators, right?
Right around then. So then it was ninth grade year. I started falling behind and just not comprehending the concepts as well. And then all through high school, like my junior year, I was in pre-calculus. And I remember second term getting a C or a C minus. And I felt really fortunate to have gotten that grade, because I didn't understand a dang thing. And if I had been thinking, like, why wouldn't I have gone back and done the previous, if not gone back a couple levels, to really solidify that so that eventually I could handle pre-calculus. And then that continued with me in college, like math 10-10. I did fine. Got, I think, B's. And then I had math 10-50. And I just remember I passed with a C, and I threw a party. I literally threw a party because I was never going to have to take math ever again. And I was so happy. But if I had had more of a base, because I remember loving math. That was my favorite subject in elementary and the first year or two of junior high. And I grew to hate it because I got in over my head.
Which, you know, doesn't take much.
Hey-o.
You got to have some short jokes, right?
I'm 5'6", by the way.
I guess in the end, to wrap this episode up, biggest thing that we're pushing for with competency-based education is really focus on the student and give them what they need, not what we want to give them, or perhaps what even they want, but in reality, give the students really what they need. And that's a quality education with the skills and abilities to go out to the real world and succeed in whatever their chosen endeavors are. Join us next week for our next episode. We are grateful that Superintendent Reed Newey was with us on this episode. And with that, I'll say adios.
Hasta luego.
A plus.
Thanks for getting down with Level Up.
Ben, at the meeting the other day on Monday, he did throw a couple of jabs in at me talking about how teachers need to look after themselves and be healthy and tell me how I need to be. I'll sleep 4 hours a night and drink Coke all I want. Tell the doctor tells me otherwise.
Play video games and grade papers in my underwear.
This is why Miles is such a joy to be around.
Look, I'm telling you, the Coke gives me my sweet disposition.
So where does the sourness come from?
Huh? No, that's genetic.
I met the old man.
It's genetic?
No, he's, you met his...
He's fun.
You met his public persona.